You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy. Uprooted out of Africa, our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshie. Peace, family. Hope everything is well with you today. It is Wednesday. Got to get over the hump. So I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, need to do, should do, must do, can do, will do, and I hope that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, I know you'll get it done. I know you will, because we need brothers and sisters who are serious and committed to getting it done. No procrastination. That's right. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to the archives, go to timeforanawakening.com, look for other programming on the page, click on that, and then look for African Perspectives. Red, Black, and Green Lion with African Posed, of previous recorded programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays, once again, I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Right after this program, on Mondays and Wednesdays, is the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. Acres of Diamonds is public affairs programming out of Philadelphia. Right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. He had a good show last night. I got a chance to listen to some of it. Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then also from 8 to 10 on Wednesdays this evening, it's Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. On Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening, brothers and sisters. That's what time it is, and that's with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an awakening. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. You're right, it ain't me. It is Sister PLC with her program, Revive. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call to listen or to give your perspective on these programs is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses. It's the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. So check them out. And if you're in the Atlanta area, you can go to the Greenbrier Mall right off of Georgia Highway 166. And they have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall that you can buy the products direct from WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tahimba is ready to go to the motherland very soon on the 22nd of May. And he's going to Ghana for 14 days, a chance to look at the beautiful country and to see the things that you either read about or were told about, and you can see them for yourself. And that is Africa for the Africans. If you want to, you give Brother Bomani a call at 404-931-9429, 404-931-9429. He has other programs, other tours upcoming November 22nd to December 2nd. He's going to South Africa, Johannesburg and Cape Town. And then in December 24th to January 4th, 2020, he's going back to Ghana. So you can be a part of those trips. Give him a call or go online to AfricaForTheAfricans.org. If you want to see photos of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. Shrine of the Black Madonna. All the things that you need are at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. They have it all. It's a beautiful sanctuary. It's a beautiful place right there on Abernathy. Right there is a stone. That's the cornerstone of the West End, is the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Located 946 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard in the West End. And the number to call is 404-549-8676, 404-549-8676. They have furniture. They have clothing. They have the red, black, and green shoes. And, of course, they have books. They also have an African Holocaust Museum, all kinds of artwork, statues, and so forth. They also have a history program every Saturday, Know Thyself, from 1:30 to 3:30 on Saturdays. If you cannot make the class, but you want that information, you want to develop a library, they have a multimedia library with over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books. Brothers and sisters, it is 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment, and you can have that at your disposal from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Other bookstores that I promote, and I hope that you attend the bookstores and patronize the bookstores in your community. If you don't have one, make contact, because there's nothing more important than knowledge of self. The bookstore here in Atlanta is also in the Greenbrier Mall, right next to near the We Buy Black kiosk that they have in the Greenbrier Mall is the Medu bookstore. And if they don't have the book that you want, they'll get it for you. Another bookstore is Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. Brother Kazimde Ajamu is the proprietor, and they're located in Lithonia. The number 404-519-8107, 404-519-8107. And I will be doing a presentation, Our Historical Journey to Greatness, An African Perspective, on Friday, May 24th at 7 p.m. at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, 6984 Main Street in Lithonia. Hope you can join me. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Us Lifting Us, as we like to say, family-centered economics. We pull our money together to provide the goods and services for our people, also to provide jobs for our people. Collectively, we are a collective people, Us Lifting Us. The radio broadcast is on Thursday. Thursday's radio broadcast on Blog Talk Radio is 9 p.m. from 9 to 10. And the number to call is 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789. We pulled our monies together and we created Cafe Ulu. Cafe Ulu is located 2036 Sylvan Road in the Sylvan Plaza, right off of 166, Georgia 166, near I-7585 in Atlanta. Open Tuesday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 7, Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5. And we have coffee. In fact, a brother was in the cafe the other day promoting an Angolan coffee. Angolan, I'm quite sure we'd probably get a chance to try that. But we have Cameroon, which is my favorite, Tanzanian, Kenyan, and Ethiopia, well, of course, where coffee was originated. We also have Burundi. A lot of good coffees. Of course, Brazil and Panamanian and Nicaraguan and Papua New Guinea. Yeah, coffee. We also have loose teas. And everything, dear brothers and sisters, sold at Cafe Ulu is produced by us. Everything. We also have a vitality drink, Ambrosia, created by Brother Novak Young. Ambrosia. Delicious vitality drink made with alkaline water, ginger, turmeric, cane, organic cane sugar and chlorophyll, as well as hibiscus, as well as cinnamon, aloe vera, cayenne, and spirulina. That's right. Ambrosia. Akabin Institute, Baba Baruti and Yah Baruti have been doing an outstanding job, and of course they need your consistent help. And please write a check or money order to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30311. If you want to give by PayPal or Cash App, you can do so. The dollar sign, Yah M. Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, and or paypal.com/Akabin Village. At the end of the month, they have the complimentary conference celebrating African love, the 31st, May 31st and June 1st. And it's going to be at the Sweet Spot, 1675 Metropolitan Parkway, just east of the West End, just east. And Friday, it will be a meet and greet. And then Saturday is the conference. Let's stay together. That's right. Establishing the importance of brothers and sisters coming together to produce children for family and good family life, good stable life, good community life. And check it out. That'll be May 31st and June 1st. Juneteenth Day upcoming very soon. This weekend, of course, is Malcolm X. Sunday is Malcolm X's birthday and the Malcolm X celebration in the West End Park, or as we like to call it, Malcolm X Park, will be this Saturday and Sunday. This Saturday and Sunday. A lot of good things are being planned. The Last Poets will be the main attraction. The Last Poets. That's right. Omar Ben Hussein and that group. Last Poets. So that's upcoming. And then next month in June is Juneteenth Day. June 14th, 15th, and 16th celebrated here. Unlike some places that may celebrate it on June 19th, which is the day, but they celebrated the weekend. They give it a weekend, a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And so we'll check out more about Juneteenth Day as it approaches. So, the Inye Sesim. The Inye Sesim, brothers and sisters, the revolutionary thought, the daily revolutionary thought. I'm going to read the day before and today's. The day before, May 14th. When you are leading a vigilant life, you console yourself by claiming that you are a born traveler. The Akan, it's an Akan proverb. We are again in the throes of regentrification, the process where Europeans move us to where they want us to be so they can be where we are, places which they once abandoned in hate of us. We are witnessing the reshuffling of a deck of socially marked cards, with us being dealt bad cards. Sadly, some of us see victory in these losing hands, unable to see cards coming from the bottom of the deck because they're excited just to be invited to the casino. Obvious to any sense of self, defined outside of insanity of the cheating overlords they have modeled their very existence after, they interpret regentrification as a moving them closer to the privileged bedroom of the dealer. They forget that a people willing to settle wherever they are tossed, who run, dodging intentionally increased taxes and police occupation, shuddering without foresight or planning, will ever be homeless. Nothing is wrong with relocation unless the move separates you from your spirit, from the bones of your ancestors, just as nothing is wrong with migrating to a better place. In fact, in the game of chess, players must sometimes retreat to save vulnerable pieces. But retreat is always made to a better position for attack. Players will even place prize pieces on jeopardized squares so they can be forced to inconspicuously move to a more advantageous one. With this in mind, as we run, we are moving to a better position or just fleeing with no empowering objective. Affirm, every move I make has a plan, affirm. Every move I make has a plan. May 15th. If armed militia are not organized, the masses cannot manifest their power in the struggle against the enemy. If armed militia are not organized, the masses cannot manifest their power in the struggle against the enemy. Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. I will not be intimidated by an enemy. I will show them no fear. I will not compromise the integrity of our people. I will not retreat from the battle except as a tactic to gain a decisive military advantage. I will train my mind, body, and spirit in the warrior methods of my ancestors. I will study other warrior methods only as a means of determining how to me more decisively defeat them. I will remember that those we consider the masters of death, destruction, and domination could never have defeated us without our assistance. They are not that good. I will never vent my rage against family. Family is what I'm charged to protect. I will show my people's enemy only the mercy they demonstrated toward my ancestors. I will listen to no other propaganda than that of the proven African warriors who came before me and who now stand at my side. I will not judge my enemies individually. Enemy is understood in the context of nations at war. I will protect my elders, complement, and children. I will always be on guard. I will never lower my eyes from the enemy. I will trust only worthy Africans. A person cannot be your friend and enemy at the same time. Dismiss contradictory Africans. It is no accident that treason has become a profitable survival strategy for the weak and spineless who deceitfully infiltrate our sanctuaries looking for faults to create and exploit for our enemies. If for no other reason, warriors must prove their worth and loyalty. Affirm, I am fully armed. Affirmed, I am fully armed. The Inye Sesem, the Revolutionary Daily Thoughts. I am fully armed. Today, we didn't get a chance Monday. I wanted to talk about Stephen Biko, so I'm going to do that today because I think it's important. I always close the program with his dynamic quote, and rightfully so, because it is just that. It is a dynamic quote, and he is a beautiful brother who sacrificed much, but who had the understanding of what was happening. Clearly, Stephen Biko was very clear on what was happening and who the enemy was and how we need to progress. So we'll talk about that in the second hour. I'm going to talk right now. I just seen on an email as well as on Facebook from Chicago, Dr. Anderson Thompson made his transition. Brother Andy Thompson was a dynamic individual. He was part of the Chicago group, as they called it, of brothers and sisters, who really took the ancient Kemetic knowledge to another height, and who was working with and part of the Chicago group with Dr. Jacob Carruthers. Dr. Jacob Carruthers and Dr. Conrad Wuerl, my good friend Dr. Conrad Wuerl, as well as Dr. Starks, you know. So I couldn't find anything on Andy Thompson. So I looked at Dr. Jacob Carruthers because they were contemporaries, even though Dr. Carruthers had took a leadership position and truly a dynamic individual, no doubt about it. I really appreciate Dr. Jacob Carruthers and what he was getting to the table, you know. So I'm going to read this piece by, well, first let me give you a little bit of background more of Andy Thompson in reference too, as a contemporary of Dr. Jacob Carruthers, because Dr. Carruthers, or Shimshu Shat Jehudi, that's right, Jehudi Mez, Jetty, Baba Jetty, Baba Jetty, as we called him before his passing. And wow, I remember going to Baba Jetty's homegoing. He was only 73 years old. I'm not sure how old Dr. Andy Thompson is, but I'm going to read this part here on when he moved to Chicago. After 2 years of teaching, this is Dr. Jacob Carruthers, after 2 years of teaching political science at Kansas State College, Dr. Carruthers moved to Chicago, where he would live and work for the rest of his life. In 1968, Carruthers joined the Center for Inner City Studies in Northeastern Illinois University, which is now called the Jacob Carruthers Center for Inner City Studies. For the next 32 years, Dr. Carruthers taught history and education at the center, playing a critical role in the development of the graduate and undergrad degrees in the Department of Inner City Studies. So this should be noted that they helped a number of brothers and sisters obtain teaching certificates and teaching degrees to access the Chicago public school systems and other school systems. The context created by the work of the Inner City Studies with such a formidable minds, with such formidable minds as Dr. Anderson Thompson, Andy Thompson, Dr. Starks, and of course my good friend, Brother Conrad World, Dr. Conrad World, would lead to the development of the African-centered intellectual movement that would eventually be known as the Chicago School of African-centered Thought. Several African-centered institutions would come out of this movement, the major ones of which Dr. Carruthers would be a driving force. In 1975, that was 1 year after Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop and Dr. Theophilo Binga defended the African origins of ancient Kemet at the UNESCO Symposium in Cairo, Dr. Carruthers visited Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop in Senegal. And here's what his wife, Sister Ife Carruthers, writes. Diop impressed upon Baba Jake the importance of study of ancient Kemet, and more important, the need to center that study around the command of the Kemetic language, commonly called hieroglyphs, better known or should be known as Medunecher. Returning from this meeting, Baba Jetty set about helping to establish the organizational base to centerize Kush and Kemet as classical African civilization upon which liberated African institutions will rest. Carruthers heeded the advice of Dr. Diop and immediately threw himself toward the task of learning the ancient Kemetic language, the Medunecher, so as to have a direct access to ancient sources while urging others to do likewise as a matter of urgency. This led to the establishment of several key African city study group movements, and of course one being the development of ASCAC. With a solid grounding in the understanding of the cultural unity of Africa and the common and the command in the classical African language of Medunecher, Baba Jetty was instrumental in among a team of African Center scholars in creating an African Center context for the systematic study of African history, with the objective of raising African institutions from the and from the rescued knowledge they had gained. In 1978, Baba Jetty and African Center research team composed of Dr. Ben Levy. In 78, Dr. Carruthers and an African Center research team composed of Dr. Joseph Ben Levy, Anderson Thompson, and Conrad World founded the Kemetic Institute. This organization was born to address the needs for serious restoration-driven research by Africans on the classical African civilizations of Kush and Kemet. Baba Jetty, as the founding director of the Institute, consistently clarified that the Institute was to serve as a springboard for African-centered institutions building by providing the knowledge base from which other institutions could be nourished. And then in 19, 1984, in February 1984, Baba Jetty, along with Dr. John Henry Clark, Dr. Asa Hilliard, Dr. Leonard Jeffries, Dr. Joseph Ben Jochanan, as well as Dr. Malana Karinga, founded the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations. ASCAC has the first annual Ancient Egyptian Studies Conference in Los Angeles, of which Baba Jetty was elected the first president. So you can see Anderson Thompson was always right there. Good brother, a good man. There was a piece, I apologize, I can't find it. I had a piece on racism. And different definitions, more definitive definitions of what racism is. And Andy had a very good one, and I'm going to find that real soon. But I want to read you this of what Baba Baruti posted on Andy Thompson. And Anderson Thompson was a very good man, a very good brother, and he will truly, truly be missed for the work that and the things that he contributed to the, as they say, the forward flow of our history. The Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations put forth a directive to say that we must develop a historiography of our studies. And so they developed the preliminary challenge. And there's a segment in there by Andy Thompson. I'm going to read Developing an African Historiography. When a people lose the knowledge of who they are, that is, their culture, they lose the very foundation upon which their individual existence and their society is based. To combat this loss, each African person must be equipped with a grand vision of the future, a vision extending beyond personal interests, such as this vision becomes the embodiment of the vital interests and moral centerhood of the entire African world community. I refer to this vision as the African principle. The African principle places moral, economic, political, and spiritual centerhood of African people on the African continent, the land of our ancestors. It is the ideological, spiritual, and moral direction of African people. It is the underlying source that makes us who we are and what we are. It is the voice of our ancestors. It is the essence of our existence. Moreover, the African principle is the underlying source of the African value system, the gift from our ancestors passed on through our ancestors, passed down to us through our ancestors. It represents those standards, rules, laws, and customs that should guide our behavior and serve as a foundation and motivation for all our actions. It is the quality underlining the source of our existence. Some, if not most, of our African leaders have compromised the African principle in order to achieve personal success and security at the expense of the African masses. In essence, the African principle requires that African organizations act in the greatest interests of the greatest number of African people. As such, the African principle is the standard against which we must measure the actions of our leaders and the organizations that claim to represent the interests of the masses of African people. Anderson Thompson. And he will truly be missed. He's a great man. I know in a number of years he has developed dementia, but as I remember him, talking to him, hearing him do presentations at ASCAC conferences, and imploring our members and our people to study, to do research. He even talked about going to Kemet to do the research, primary research. He was in favor of brothers and sisters going with Brother Anthony Browder to excavate the 25th Dynasty tomb, which Brother Anthony Browder has been doing an outstanding job. That is phenomenal, the amount of progress he has for that. And he will truly be missed. You know, has some of our people who, for me, who I remember, who I read about, who I've had opportunities to meet and to listen to and to network with or to talk to. The impact that these men and women have made upon me in my life and giving me the kind of direction, I thank them. I thank our ancestors. I thank God for putting me in this position. You know, how I feel about what we as African people have experienced and continue to experience, it is not good. We know it. This fact is sad. But I want to say that if we are to get up out of this madness, it is embracing the concepts and the ideas and the methodology and the practice that those men and women put forth. See, I look at our ancestors in a warrior-like position. I don't look at our ancestors. I heard others say our ancestors fought for voting rights, and our ancestors fought for these other things to happen and to be a part of the institutions that they call. I'm sorry. I don't think our ancestors, there's a good quote, you know, it's this, let me get that one, because that's a good one, you know. When people, and I hate when people say that too, you know. And the brother says, none of my ancestors died for me so I can vote for the same Caucasian people that killed them, or into a system that we can never change. Your people, our people die for the right to, man, shut up. What has changed fundamentally? What has changed for the betterment of African people because of this idea that we must vote and that our ancestors died for the right? No, they were killed. They were murdered. They were assassinated. Yes, I understand what Caucasians do to manipulate the vote even to this very day. I understand what happened right here in the state of Georgia. And in the state of Florida and in other places around this country. But it don't mean a damn thing anyway, because even if the person won and got in, the same thing would happen. The status quo would be maintained. Because that's what the bottom line is in this system. Everything about this system, this European, Caucasian, extremist, racist, privileged system, is designed for the betterment and the maintenance for Europeans at the expense of everybody else. Do not get it twisted, as the saying goes. That's why men and women like Anderson Thompson and all the others, those are the ancestors I listen to. Those are the ancestors I embrace. They were not accommodationists. They were not integrationists. They were not assimilationists. they understood clearly who this enemy is. I listened to Dr. Amos Wilson, Dr. Francis Cress Welsey. I listened to the men and women. Even I would listen to Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois because he awakened at the end. Because there has to become that moment, as Dr. Bobby Wright says, that moment of truth. When we look at the European for who and what they are and what they have done and what they're continuing to do, and realize that they suffer from cognitive dissonance, that they suffer from Caucasian fragility, that they have a mindset no matter what. They suffer from Caucasian hegemony or hegemony, ever how you want to pronounce that word. They suffer from those things. But all of those things that they suffer from is a benefit for them at the expense of others. The cognitive dissonance, even though their belief is that they are superior, that their narrative is the best thing for the world, and they went about to impose it on the world. And so no matter what evidence, and there's a plethora of it, that says to them they are not, they dismiss it, they ignore it, because it doesn't fit with their core belief about themselves and their belief about others. They suffer from fragility because they don't want to hear about what they have done. They want to believe that they're good, they're righteous. They gave the world civilization. Everybody else was barbaric. Primitive. They were advanced. They want to believe that. So they don't want to hear about the destruction and the death, the domination, elimination, the genocide. They don't want to hear that. They're fragile. They don't want to hear about them imposing themselves, their theology, their concepts, their methodology on others. They don't want to hear that. They believe in their righteous hegemony or hegemony, which simply is the Caucasian saying, what is mine's, and then saying to others, what's yours is also mine's. And if it doesn't fit, I'll eliminate it. If it does, I'll co-opt it. I'll take it. I'll appropriate it. So I have to give love and respect to warrior scholars, to men and women without foundation money and grant money. Went about to reclaim and recapture and restore the history of our people. I have a deep love for, in fact, at the Zabakan Tsum Tsum, I raised up the name of Drusilla Dungy Houston. you know? And I thought to myself, wow, what an impact. But I love her. Because in 1926, when Carter G. Woodson started Negro History Week in 1926, she wrote a book called The Wonderful Ethiopians of the Ancient Kushite Empire. And her quote is deeply profound. Because when today, when you have the ability to do kind of serious research, primary research, as well as secondary research easily from your, you know, from your home, on your computer. Phone calls. texts, emails, make connect. She didn't have that in 1926, but she said, I have dug up irrefutable arsenal of facts that Harvard or Yale or even cowardly scholarship in our race can dare not refute. But this is the part of the quote that is most profound, because she says, how can a leadership point the way forward that is utterly ignorant of the past? We've been made to feel so ashamed of who we are. Just this moment, I thought about Dr. John Henry Clark and listening to him. And you know, I love Dr. John Henry Clark. And I remember listening to him. And the blessing for me is I had the opportunity to literally sit at his feet to listen to him and talk with him at lunch in the Indiana Black Expo many years ago. But I remember listening on the tape when he was doing a Sunday school lesson, and then he went to the reverend or the pastor, whoever, Caucasian, and he asked about in the Sunday school lesson. And the Caucasian said to him, John, your people have no history. The way he says it, I could feel at the time that that cracker said that to him, how he felt. Your heart drops. Your people have no history. You've never done nothing. You're primitive. You're uncivilized. Your people were running around the jungle with a rag up their ass and a bone through their nose, never having created a civilization of any consequence, of any significance. And then Dr. John Henry Clark went on this search. Took him to New York, to the Schomburg. Well, it wasn't called the Schomburg then, but Arthur Schomburg. He went to the library and met Arthur Schomburg. And I can hear him in his presentation says, I went there and I said, I want all of the information about my people, because he saw a article, The Negro Digs Up His Past, by Arthur Schomburg. The Negro Digs Up His Past. That's why I do this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. That's why I present to you the things that I present in the way that I present them. You know what, brothers and sisters, if nobody listens, so what? This is my commitment. This is my commitment to helping to free the African mind by consistently providing information based on our scholars, our historians, our researchers, our elders, our ancestors. Not some assimilationists, integrationists. No. Men and women who believed, who understood that if we're going to be a people again, we must embrace the love of self. We must eradicate this ignorance from our minds and put into our minds a belief and understanding of us as great people, as African people. And understand that Africa was the foundation for everything else to come or follow. The belief in Marcus Garvey and what he was bringing. To me, there was no greater leader than Marcus Garvey. But of course, there was always that hope, not understanding the mindset of the European, but of that hope that somehow, some way, he would get an epiphany and change his behavior towards us so we could live in this society that he stole. We gotta love those men and women. Because once again, brothers and sisters, you dispute facts you don't understand with myths you are forced to believe. This mindset keeps you mentally retarded, mentally enslaved. And that's where we are, aren't we? We're mentally enslaved. So, we're going to take a little bit of a break early, and then we come back. Talk about Stephen Biko. I said I always give that quote out, and maybe some of you want to know, because I know you know that he was from South Africa. You probably know that he was an activist. Denzel Washington played him in a movie. I think it was Cry Freedom. And after Soweto uprising of 1976, he was beaten to death. So we're going to take a break. When we come back from that break, we'll talk about Stephen Biko. You can give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay right here with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Thank you.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com, and other programming right here on Time for an Awakening Media. My program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. But immediately following this program on Monday and Wednesday is the Black People Matrix from 1 to 3 with Brother Franklin Jones. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres and Diamonds. Right after Acres and Diamonds is Less by Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC. On Wednesdays from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. On Friday, 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon on Saturdays. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And of course, disaster awareness for community preparedness is going to be on Fridays at from 4 to 6 p.m. with my good brother, Brother Youssef Muhammad. And then a number to listen to that program and to chime in to help understand all of the calamities that are happening in this country and everywhere else. And number is 563-999-3089. 563-999-3089. So, let me see here. Okay. You know I like to read this. And the reason why I'm constantly reading this, because I want us to understand clearly. We had visionaries. We had men and women who understood, but of course, been co-opted by the weak and those who are inefficient and those who would succumb to European pressure, to the colonizers' pressure, which caused a lot of brothers and sisters, you know, to unfortunately, you know, and that's how it went. That's how it went. I must have missed that program. I was going to say it as a program on separation. And I guess I missed that program. It was yesterday, airing at 7 o'clock. So I have to apologize to my good brother, Brother Youssef Muhammad. There was a program on Time to Leave. Time to Leave. On the separation. The objective is to stimulate dialogue, planning, and organizing for believers who are ready to make the move to separation. So I apologize I missed that program. If we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling among ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonization or colonialism than we suffered heretofore. Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. Prophetic words, aren't they? Prophetic words. I hate the fact that they were prophetic words. Stephen Biko. Stephen Biko was born in South Africa. Bantu Stephen Biko, December 18th, 1946, in Eastern Cape Town, Eastern Cape of South Africa. He died September 12th, 1977, 31, 30 years old. In Pretoria, South Africa. He was committed to the anti-apartheid movement. He was committed to the liberation of African people. From the Liberty Writers Africa.com. How Europeans killed Stephen Biko for fighting for African freedom in South Africa. Bantu, Stephen Biko is a heroic figure in the fight against apartheid and colonial occupation and will always be remembered for his intelligence, charisma, his philosophy, and a life cut short in the struggle against apartheid. He was born in 1946 in the segregated South Africa, where the Dutch and later the English racist and genocidal systems prevailed. He was raised in the Shoah tradition in Anglican Christian values. He lost his father when he was barely four, leaving his mother with the difficult task of raising him and his brother. In accordance with their tradition, he was initiated into adulthood following the Uwalaku traditional initiation rite and circumcision. Stephen Biko developed passion and sympathy for the Pan-African Congress after he joined his brother, Kea, at Lovedale, as organization's values were centered around affirming the African identity. Not long, the two brothers were suspected of belonging to an armed wing of the Congress. They were arrested and banished from Lovedale. Steve Biko later considered studying law, but his associates advised otherwise because of his growing political activism. He was advised to study medicine. In 1966, at the age of 20, he attended the non-European section of the segregated University of Natal in Durban, where he, as expected, joined the fight against apartheid, which was at the time dominated by progressive Caucasians. However, after a while, Biko refused to identify with multiracial organizations when he realized that the progressive Caucasians were paternalistic and their vigor in the fight against apartheid and African struggle was governed by the same ideologies as an indelible Caucasian racist. Biko could see that they imposed themselves on Africans that they considered themselves superior to. The progressive Caucasians, on the other hand, wouldn't back down on the fight against apartheid. And though some purely African organizations excluded them, it wasn't in their place to treat them as racist or take up the role of leading the Africans, since the struggle was against Caucasian racism. A quote for which Biko is best known till this day says, "The most potent weapon in the hand of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed." He made this statement because he realized the struggle that the African man's first problem was his mindset about himself. He believed Africans had problems of inferiority complex, fear, and lack of trust. This mental state gave room for exploitation and was definitely a hindrance to achieving the freedom for which they fought. African consciousness was Stephen Biko's philosophy. The pure Biko thought, which is African consciousness, was to restore the African pride as an African so that he, it is for the fight, so as African so that he can. Biko emphasized that South Africa is an African country and the natural land of the African. And so the African identity was supposed to dominate and should be accepted by others who live there. According to Biko's analysis, the element that made inferiority complex on the part of Africans thrived were the falsified African history that makes African man believe that he is incapable. He is a barbarian from the dawn of time. The European languages that make everything that is African bad. The Christian religion that serves to oppress Africans, whereas African spirituality has been sold by the dominant system and described as illogically superstitious. The African culture that has been crushed in favor of the norms of Western culture. The beauty criteria that makes African people believe that they are ugly and that beauty is Caucasian. To this end, Biko said, the basic tenet of African consciousness is that the African man must reject all value systems that seek to make him a foreigner in the country of his birth and reduce his basic humanity and his human dignity. Biko figured that it was important to awaken and spread African history and culture, to reveal the beauty of being African, to follow Africans, to make the word Africa positive, and to see that Christianity was no longer a tool of oppression against African people. Stephen Biko stated that African consciousness movement and their philosophy was to rely solely on themselves. In other words, African man, you are on your own. You are on your own. This was to get the African man to will the will as whole and responsible to solely fighting against apartheid, because freedom begins in the mind. I repeat, this was to get the African man to will the will as whole and responsible to solely fighting against apartheid, because freedom begins in the mind. To bring about the mental paradigm shift that would set the African man free of every mental chain that restricts him from harnessing his full potential. Freedom is also economical, and the process involves African economic communalism. Biko maintained a cordial relationship with Caucasian progressive leaders, but didn't accept Caucasians in the African consciousness movement. Only Africans and some Indians were accepted. In 1969, he founded SOSA, SOSA, South African Student Organization. And in 1971, at the age of 25, the Manifesto of African Consciousness Ideology, a South African student organization, was adopted. The South African student organization became a voice in South African campuses, imposing Biko's ideas under the pseudo-synonym of Frank Talk, standing in the forefront of the battle against apartheid. In 1973, Biko was bullied, charged with terrorism, and placed under house arrest with his house shut down. These happened after African consciousness movements were declared dangerous by the colonial authorities, by the colonizers. However, he found a way to communicate with the outside world. In spite of this ordeal, he raised funds to help build health centers, nurseries, aided political prisoners, as well as financed scholarships. In 1976, the Dutch tried to impose its language, Afrikaners, Afrikaans, as language of instruction on African schools. But on the 16th of June, 76, with the support of the African Consciousness Movement, 20,000 African students from Soweto marched the streets in protest, and the Caucasian police shot between 176 and 700, mostly children and adolescents, to death. This resulted in great pandemonium across the country. It was popularized as the Soweto riots, the oppression of the conscious movement members escalated. In June 18, 1977, Stephen Biko was arrested in Cape Town for breaking his house arrest. He was taken to a house in Port Elizabeth in Pretoria, where he was chained, severely beaten, and tortured. This caused him to have severe brain hemorrhage, disfigurement, kidney failure, which led to him falling into a coma. In that state, he was driven naked in the back of a normal car without medical attention for a 12-hour journey to Pretoria Central Prison, where he was left on the floor of his cell in excruciating pain. The next day, being September 12, 1977, Stephen Biko died at the age of 31. His funeral attracted 20,000 mourners. This was the first mass funeral South Africa would record until the end of apartheid. Bantu Stephen Biko should not be remembered for being a young, charismatic African who fought and died. He should be recognized for his thought, his analysis of the African problem, and the solutions he put forth should be embraced and studied all over Africa. In many ways, his thought was African-centered, Afrocentric. In other words, reinforcing the African in their identity so they can be equipped for economic and political struggle. Shengat Diop and Leopold Kayama belonged to this school of thought and believed that Stephen Biko's philosophy should be taught and learned in African schools today. I wholeheartedly agree that Stephen Biko should be studied. More importantly, though, his philosophy should be embraced, because it is the philosophy of all the men and women who believe that we must do for ourselves. It is nothing unique. It is nothing old or nothing new. It is what is right for African people. We are at war. We're at war for the minds of our people. We have been warred upon. We're experiencing menticide, a deliberate attempt to kill our minds. And because when our minds are dead, we behave and act in any form or fashion those who did it want us to. You can join this conversation. Give me a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You know, I know that my good brother Franklin Jones, he talks about that's why, to me, even though I pretty much will say some of the same things throughout the programming, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I'm not looking at it as being redundant or repetitive. I'm looking at it as being positively reinforcing the ideas of African people. That's how I'm looking at it. You know, I'm looking at it as something that we need to embrace, something that we need to agree that is something that we need to do. That's how I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it as something that is vital to the lives of African people. And I'm hoping that we understand that.
I'm going to read another piece when I get it together. I know that Monday's program, I'm going to be talking about El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, the day, second day after his birthday. So I'll be talking to, I'll be talking about the importance of, see if I can try to get Conrad Wuerl on Monday so we can talk about El Hajj Malik El Shabazz. Talk about the activities that's going to happen this past weekend and all the other good stuff. And I tell you, you know, I know that one of the things that becomes very problematic for us is to look at things that are outside of us as something that that we need to develop, you know? And if we did, imagine where we would be. Imagine where we would be if we did that. Yeah. I mentioned white fragility a few times. Dr. D'Angelo, as she describes it. A sociologist examines the white fragility that prevents Caucasians from confronting racism. It is the shield they have, you know, because they don't want to believe, you know, that who and what they are. Robin DiAngelo's book is dedicated to pulling back the veil on so-called pillars of Caucasianness, assumptions that prop up racist belief without Caucasian people realizing it. In more than 20 years of running diversity training and cultural competency workshops for American companies, the academic and educator Dr. Robin DiAngelo has noticed that Caucasian people are sensitively, historically bad at discussing racism. Like waves on a sand, their reactions from predictable patterns. They will insist that they were taught to treat everyone the same, that they are colorblind, that they don't care if you are pink, purple, or polka dot. They will point to friends and family members of color, a history of civil rights activism. Oh boy. Sometimes you hit something and, okay, well. A history of civil rights activism or more silent issues such as class or gender. They will shout and blister. They will cry. In 2011, Dr. Angelo coined the term white fragility to describe the disbelieving defensiveness that Caucasian people exhibit when their ideas about race and racism are challenged, and particularly when they feel complicit in Caucasian supremacy. Why, she wondered, did her feedback prompt such a resistance? As if the mention of racism were more offensive than the fact of the, or practice of it? In her book, Caucasian Fragility or White Fragility, D'Angelo attempts to explicit the phenomenon of Caucasian people's paper-thin skin. She argues that our largely segregated society is set up to insulate Caucasians from racial discomfort so that they fall to pieces at the very application of stress, such as, for instance, when someone suggests that flesh tone may not be an appropriate name for a beige crayon. Unless, of course, you because it may cause you some unpleasantness or more than unused to it, racial hierarchies tell Caucasian people that they are entitled to peace and difference. They lack the racial stamina to engage in difficult conversations. This leads them to respond to racial triggers. The show, Dear White People, the term WIPO, with emotions such as anger, fear, and guilt, and behaviors such as argumentation, silence, or withdrawal from the stress-inducing situation. D'Angelo, who is Caucasian, emphasized that the stances that make up Caucasian fragility are not merely irrational or even comical, though. Some of her antecedents and anecdotes participated in a voluntary anti-racism workshop, dissolving with the umbrage at any talk of racism, simmered with perverse humor. I have found the only way to give feedback without triggering Caucasian fragility is to not give it at all, she remarked. These splatterings of work, D'Angelo explains, to reinstate Caucasian equilibrium as they repel the challenge, return our racial comfort, and maintain our dominance within the racial hierarchy. She finds that the social cost for an African person in awakening the sleeping dragon of Caucasian fragility often proves so high that many African people don't risk pointing out discrimination when they see it. In the expectation of Caucasian solidarity, Caucasian people will forbid from correcting each other's racial missteps to preserve the peace, makes genuine allyship elusive. Caucasian fragility holds racism in place. I don't even want to talk about it. I don't want to see it. Just shut up and go along to get along. D'Angelo addresses her book mostly to Caucasian people, and she reserves her harshest criticism for Caucasian liberals like herself and like the writer of this column, whom she sees as refusing to acknowledge their own participation in this racist system. I believe, she writes, that Caucasian progressives cause the most daily damage to people of color. Not only do these people fail to see the complicity, but they take a self-serving approach to an ongoing anti-racism effort. To the degree that Caucasian progressives think we have arrived, we will put our energy into making sure that others see us as having arrived. Even the racial beliefs and responses that feel authentic or well-intentioned have likely been programmed by Caucasian supremacy to perpetuate Caucasian supremacy. Caucasians profit off an American political and economic system that showers advantages on racial winners and oppresses racial losers. Yet D'Angelo writes, Caucasian people cling to the notion of racial innocence, a form of weaponized denial that positions African people as their havers, as the havers of race, and guardians of racial knowledge. Whiteness, on the other hand, or Caucasianness, on the other hand, scans an invisible default, a form of racelessness, color blindness. The argument that race shouldn't matter prevents us from grappling with how it is and how it does. Much of Caucasian fragility is dedicated to pulling back the veil on these so-called pillars of Caucasianness. Assumptions that prop up racist belief without realizing it. Such ideologies include individualism or distinctively Caucasian Americans' dream that one writes one's own destiny and the objectivity of the confidence that one can free oneself entirely from bias. As a sociologist, such ideologies include individualism or distinctively Caucasian Americans' dream that one writes one's own destiny and the objectivity, the confidence that one can free oneself entirely from bias. As a sociologist trained in mapping group patterns, D'Angelo couldn't help but regard both precepts as naive at best and ignorant and arrogant at worst. Be perceived as an individual, to not be associated with anything negative because of your skin color, she notes, is a privilege largely afforded to the Caucasian people. Although most school shooters, domestic terrorists, and rapists in the United States are Caucasian, it is rare to see a Caucasian man on the street reduced to a stereotype. Likewise, people of color often endure having their views attributed to their racial identities. The luxury of impartiality is denied them. In outlining these discrepancies, D'Angelo draws heavily on the words of African writers and scholars, Ta-Nehisi Coates, Toni Morrison, Cheryl Harrison, others. Although, perhaps surprisingly, she incorporates few present-day interviews with people of color. And D'Angelo's almost epistemological vision of Caucasian racism, our minds and the bodies play host to a pantheon that seeks to replicate itself, sickening us in the process. Like mutating viruses, racism shapeshifts in order to stay alive. When an explicit expression becomes taboo, it hides in the coded language. Nor does prejudice disappear when people decide that they will no longer tolerate it. It just looks for ways to avoid distraction. The most effective adaptation of racism over time, D'Angelo claims, is the idea that racism is conscious bias held by mean people. This good-bad binary positions a world of evil racists and compassionate non-racists. In itself, a racist construct, systematic injustice and embedding racism with such shattering moral meanings that Caucasian people, especially progressives, cannot bear to face their conclusion in it. Pause on that. You may have subconsciously developed strong negative feelings about racism in order to escape having to help dismantle it. As an ethical thinker, D'Angelo belongs to the Unitarian school, which places less importance on attitudes than on the ways in which attitudes cause harm. Unpacking the fantasy of American African men as dangerous and violent, she does not simply fact check it. She shows the myths useful to Caucasian people to obscure the historical brutality against African American people and to justify continued abuse. D'Angelo sometimes adapts a soothing, conciliatory tone toward Caucasian readers as she were appeasing a child on the verge of a tantrum. If your definition of racist is someone who holds a conscious dislike of people because of their race, then I agree that it is offensive for me to suggest that you are racist when I don't know you, she writes. I also agree that if this is your determination and definition of racism and you are against racism, then you are not a racist. I'm not using this definition of racism. I'm not saying that you are immoral. If you remain open and I lay out my argument, it should soon begin to make sense. One has the grim hunch that such a approach has been honed over years of placating red-faced Caucasian workshop participants leaping at an excuse to discount their instructor. D'Angelo, for all the outrageousness she documents, never comes across as anything other than paternally calm, patient, and lucid, issuing prescriptions for a better world as if from beneath a blanket. Her almost motorized clarifies the book's sake. She cannot afford to lose us who are so easily lost. Is that it? Well, I've heard her speak. I've used it. The bottom line is, it's just like everything is denial. The Caucasian is in constant denial. Once again, they suffer from cognitive dissonance and Caucasian fragility and European hegemony. And because of those three factors, there's nothing that we as African people can say or do to change their minds. They have no guilt. They are psychopaths. They are Dr. Bobby Wright is on point. They are psychopaths in their relationship to us. They have no guilt at all, no remorse. They've done it. In fact, their mindset is, it was a means to an end, so I'll do it again. You can join me at 215-490-9832. A couple of callers are on. They left and come back. I was reading that information. So if you want to call, comment on that, Stephen Biko, or you can comment on 646-646. Good afternoon.
Yeah, Oshie, what's happening, man?
How you doing, dear brother? How are you today? Good.
I'm good, man.
Good.
You know, it's crazy when you think about what them no good filthy devils did to Stephen Biko, man, and the many others that we don't even know about,
right,
man.
Exactly.
You know, Stephen Biko is just one that we know about.
That's right.
But there were many, many, many others that got the same treatment, and if not worse, for standing up to them devils. And to now, all these years later, to look at the position that the South Africans are and even think about the position that we are here and the constant attack that we are under. And like you were talking earlier about this whole political thing, you know, the mindset and the attitude of our people sometimes show our mental sickness clearly each and every day. How could any black person, and this is, I'm addressing those that talk so bad about Hillary Clinton and who didn't support her, like myself and others, how the hell could you talk about supporting the facilitator, the architect of it, Joe Biden? I mean, it just goes to show the blatant actions of some of us crazy Negroes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just shows that we insane. Because there's no way whatsoever the black community, or as they talk about all of these black women who support this bastard with the damage that they've done to their children. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. All because of the simple fact he was there for 8 years with Puff the Magic Negro Obama. It just shows how sick we are. It shows how we have no type of real serious fight, no type of payback, no type of nothing in regards to once we are attacked and harmed. It's like we're going to forgive our oppressor
right,
the day we hit the ground.
Right.
You know, the day. You know, and it's just madness. Because when you try to articulate that to people, you know, it's the first thing they tell you is, well, you got to get past it. You got to forgive. You know what I mean? Get the F out of here. I don't forgive and forgive nothing.
No.
When it comes to the destruction of my people. And, you know, I'm going to give you an example. And I'm going to show you the difference between a cracker and us. You see what's happening in Alabama, in Georgia, in Ohio, in all of these states in regards to the attack on women and their reproductive rights and
right,
the draconian ways in which they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you, there's going to be some payback. There's going to be some payback. Now, the reality is it's going to hurt a lot of us.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's going to hurt a lot of us. But it's going to be payback because it's only going to be a motivational tool for women to come together to support what they truly love, Roe versus Wade. Now, the reality is if this thing gets to the court, Roe versus Wade is a wrap. You know what I'm saying? But in the process, I can guarantee you there's going to be a lot of casualties.
Well,
on both sides.
Human casualties
and those so-called political casualties.
So you're saying that in because of what Georgia, particularly Alabama, a number of other states have done, this will go especially Alabama. Alabama, they made it clear we're taking the most extreme measure because we want this to go to the Supreme Court.
To go to the Supreme Court. The woman who wrote the bill said that's what she was.
Yeah.
All because they feel now they have the majority.
Right. And they do. They got a 5-4 majority.
And it changed. But, you know, sometimes you think that you're changing something, and in the process, it's going to cost you more in the long run. Now, it's going to hurt a lot of people, but believe me, it's going to just put women in a totally different position to deal with their bodies, as they say. What? Now, a lot of people don't know this. White women have more abortions than women of color.
Of course, because there's more Caucasian women. And I think, and what's ironic is that here you have, which of course is the majority of Caucasian men who are fighting this, you know, and then if they win, and you know, say, we don't want you to have an abortion. But the other irony is that if you don't have an abortion, we ain't giving you nothing for your offspring. You know,
that's the thing. That's the crazy.
There is no programs for them. You know.
Yeah, but what are you bringing the child in the world to try to boost your population, white man? Because you're not going to basically place the child in any sort of basically loving situation. How are you going to tell some woman that's been raped or have incest that they can't abort a child created on that type of wickedness? I mean, just imagine that type of evilness, not only within the child, but the type of psychological damage that it does to a woman that has to take that child with her.
Well,
and then, you know, what are you going to do? It's just like, I'll say this to you. If I knew that I was adopting a child that was created through incest or rape, and that the mother wanted to abort it, and that the child, and that the mother couldn't because of these draconian laws, I would never adopt that baby. Because that baby is going to be a bad seed. I'm sorry to say it. Because the child is innocent in birth, but the whole spirit of the child is going to be evil. It's not going to have no... It's from the time...
That's possible.
Created, it's no love. It's that's, no
right.
nothingness.
Right, that's right. That's
you
possible.
Can't be like that.
Yeah, because all the time while the child was in the womb, the vibrations and the spirit was bad towards the child.
Because it's not a question.
Yeah.
That's what crackers done to a lot of us.
Yeah.
The rape of African women, the forced birth of children during slavery. Nobody talks about these things. Or nobody understands it spiritually or culturally.
Mm-hmm.
No, man, if somebody said this is how a child was created and you had the opportunity to raise that child, I tell them, man, take that. I don't want that.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta love all children, that's BS.
Yeah.
Stop with that BS, because white folks tell you to feel a certain way and think a certain way. Do you know, Brother O.C., I was talking with a friend of mine the other night, and I was saying to him, one of the biggest problems with black people that study psychology and things of that nature, they don't understand that there's an African perspective and there's that devil's perspective. And most of the time, black people never study the African perspective. That's why any psychologist that I've ever spoke to, I always ask them, have they read the works of Amos Wilson, Naeem Akbar, Bobby Wright, you know, some of the other psychologists. And when they say no, they haven't, I don't even say anything more to them.
Yeah.
Because I know they don't know the other side. I didn't understand it until a brother dropped it on me and said, yo, you got to read some Amos Wilson. You got to read Naeem Akbar. You got to read Bobby's thing. You know, you got to listen to other scholars that come from a psychological perspective, from culturally African. And you see the difference. It's like when you read works of Baba Baruti, you always see the difference between an African logic and a European logic. It's really not natural the way that this European thinks and behaves. And we don't understand that. That's mental sickness that we suffer from. That's why it's as you refer to it, as cognitive dissonance. That's why we could allow somebody like a Joe Biden to be perceived as a person that will do good by us.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And we don't even realize that cracker ain't never did good by us. If anything, he's done more harm to us over the last 30 or 40 years than most white men have.
And I was wondering why he was chosen by Barack, or apparently, I believe, the Democratic Party chose him. Barack didn't choose him. Barack didn't do anything. Barack was just a figurehead.
He was just a figurehead and a puppet.
Yep.
That's why it'd be interesting as time go on. I mean, you know what's even more crazy, Brother Owens? When you look at this filthy, stinking, no good cracker you got in the hunky house right there. I mean, just look at this cat and look at all of the things that he's doing. All of the destruction that he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And white folks and crazy Negroes love him.
They love him.
He has more of a chance to get back in office than anything. And look at what he's doing to the soybean farmers, along with the manipulation of them mentally by throwing them crumbs. Whereby, you know, the whole mindset of a farmer is different from a cat that's going to work for a 9-to-5. You know, they just see the world totally different.
Yeah.
And they have allowed themselves to be duped by this bastard.
And see, that's the part that kind of baffles me to some degree. I haven't, you know, because of how he is and the idea and the things that he's done, the things that he said in his history and so forth. How could you even, and I mean, with the tariffs on and causing the economic problems globally that's happening and particularly here and all the other stuff, how he could even possibly be reelected after this?
Because he's a white man and he's putting forward a narrative of white nationalism. And remember, this is a country of white people where the systems are being declined for them, where things are not getting better for them. It's just like, you know, we constantly telling our kids to go and get this college degree. Nah, stop telling your kids to get a college degree. You better off telling your kids to get a trade or to go into some sort of STEM.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, to be honest with you, if you really got self-discipline, you could learn STEM without getting in any debt.
Yeah.
I got a nephew making over 100K, and he ain't been to no college. He done taught himself everything to the point to now, within the next couple of months, he's going to go and get his network certificate. And look, after he get that, you know, he's going to be making almost two a year with no debt. Why? Because he works and he go home at night and he study them books and he learns and he does the things to whereas he has the ability to apply it. And they're going to hire you in that industry. You don't have to have a degree in that industry. I know cats that doing apps now and doing coding that's making 80, 90 G's a year.
And see,
you know what I'm saying?
And
so
see,
that's what you need to be leading your kids to instead of going to some damn college.
And see, and what's interesting, Jay, all of these, what's interesting, all of these profit colleges popped up in the last 20-some years, and many of already have gone bankrupt and disappeared, but the whole idea was to make money. We'll find you the money. It's all about that. And then once you got that degree, you got no job placement. You can't get a job in the degree that you got the degree in. you know, all this other stuff, but yet you owe all this damn money. And of course, the federal government is not going to say what?
You see what the what you call them did with the cracker in the Uruguay house did with his college. They had to shut that bad boy down, and he got sued. And luckily, those who took out loans to deal with his situation, they were forgiven because it was a sham.
It was a sham. Hey, listen, I got to run. I got to make way for the Black Matrix, the Black People Matrix.
See the time.
Yeah, that time.
So, all I can tell you this, man, your boy Black Matrix show is a very interesting show, man.
All right. Peace to you. Thanks, Jay.
All right.
Brothers and sisters, it is that time again. I hope that, talking about Dr. Anderson Thompson, a warrior scholar, a warrior ancestor, talking about Stephen Biko, another warrior ancestor, you know, helps to understand the reality of our situation. So we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Hope to see you on Friday. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodio means our victorious destiny. We will be victorious. Peace, family. Have a blessed day.